Welcome to Mysterious Universe Plus, Season 23, Episode 15. Coming up on the show, we've got Implants of the Green Eagles, the Peanut Butter Zone, and Minnesota's Ultimate Sasquatch Hotspot. I'm Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Is the Peanut Butter Zone similar to something like a silent zone, an unusual zone? Like, is it something paranormal, or is it just a lot of peanut butter?
It's just a lot of peanut butter. It's just a zone where there's other places in this area where you set up little offerings and trinkets to interact with Sasquatch. There's
Of course it's Sasquatch.
There's dice and there's like a magnet, you know, those letter and alphabet magnets that you put on the fridge. There's yeah. one of those.
He's not a toddler.
Well,
yeah, we know he's not that bright.
And there's also a peanut butter zone where they just set up massive jars of peanut butter. And out of all the zones of interaction,
that's the one.
That's the hotspot. Yeah. That's where all the magic happens, in the peanut butter zone. I'm referring, of course, to a new book from Mike Quast called Sasquatch Central, High Strangeness at a Northern Minnesota Homestead. And this is approaching Skinwalker Ranch territory in terms of weirdness.
Right. So you mean kind of interdimensional stuff and disappearances, reappearances.
Some weird stuff going on. It all happened last year and the previous year. So it's all very new stuff from Mike. And looking forward to going into it because it's been a while since we've looked at some wild Sasquatch stories.
It has been, yeah.
What have you got cooked up?
Well, I just wanted to go into this video footage that's just suddenly gone viral here in Australia. It's very, very strange. It seems like, I mean, the headline was saying that it was a child that was crossing a four-lane highway in the middle of the night.
What?
Yeah, it looks, so as soon as I saw the headline, right, I didn't think anything paranormal about it at all. And I loaded it up and I'm like, that ain't no child. There's some, I don't know what it is. It's very odd. I'll link to it in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself. I'm going to talk about it later in the show so you can talk about the actual details of it. But then there's all this weirdness that's now following on from it where the police are saying that, oh, we found a child. And then apparently they're saying, no, we didn't find a child. We don't know what you're talking about. Very, very odd. But it falls in with a theory that was put forward by Ann Slate many, many years ago. And Ann Slate was convinced that extraterrestrials do these things on purpose, purposely expose us to very strange things, you know, causing, well, it wasn't viral videos back then, but causing a ruckus and a stir amongst the community because they're psychologically testing us. So we're going to go into some of those cases where people have been exposed to very weird circumstances and the extraterrestrials have interacted with the people to collect information from them.
That's a pretty bold segue.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
From Daily Mail video to a overarching alien conspiracy.
I'm pretty impressed with it myself, so we'll get back into it later.
Well, the Sasquatch Central book is brand new, and Michael Quast, he's been a Bigfoot researcher in Minnesota specifically for over 30 years.
Yeah.
It's his home state, and he's actually been naturally drawn to fringe topics, he says, ever since he was 8 years old. This was in 1976. He was in the back of his parents' car, and he glanced out, and about 100 yards away, he claims he saw a tall, black figure. He doesn't describe it, what it did, whether it was loping away or just standing there, but he could tell it wasn't human, it was something else. And ever since that day, he's just been obsessed with proving what he saw all those years ago.
Isn't this so classic, though, for so many of the people that we talk about, you know, and researchers in this field, they've always had some type of childhood experience. Like some type of childhood experience just triggers this lifelong obsession.
Well, his last book, which only came out in 2019, again, focused on Minnesota, he chronicled over 700 sightings in the state. And it wasn't until the book came out that he discovered this new site. He's kind of kicking himself because it's like the ultimate hotspot. There's so much activity going on at this homestead in Minnesota. The entire book is just focused on this one property. And it turns out it's only 3 hours drive from his home, which, you know, in Sasquatch research terms,
that's
is
nothing.
Quite close.
Yeah, it's next door.
He just said it became the single most intense Bigfoot case he had ever seen. Now, the owner of the property is a man named Randy Bauer. He's a 60-year-old, a very active woodsman kind of guy. He owns this really large property a few miles out of a little town called Black Duck in the northern part of the state. It's a tiny little town. There's only a population of 800 people or so. And it's in the upper third of the state.
Yep.
And it's heavily forested, so you've got to think of the wilderness that's in the area.
I'm not sure if it's the BFRO, but I know that there is a database that has quite a number of Bigfoot sightings and Sasquatch sightings from that area, because I remember the name of the town, because a town name is unusual.
Well, like I said, his last book documented 700 cases in Minnesota.
So much activity there.
Now, he said one might expect people living in this rugged region to be cattle farmers or lumber mill workers, and many of them are, like a couple of his neighbours are farmers. But Randy's a little bit different. He's a musician, and he plays saxophone, keyboards, accordion. He does sound engineering. He runs this band called Smokehouse, and they do a bit of travelling and touring around. So he's a very musical guy and a dedicated family man as well, Mike explains. He's got six children, 11 grandchildren. He's with his second wife, Terry, who lives obviously with him at the property. And apart from his musical career, his main love is the woods that surround where he lives.
Yep.
He just loves going out to the woods. He's regularly hunted on the property for 20 years, and he's got 40 acres, so it's plenty of space. But he's also really close with his neighbours, and his neighbours also have, you know, like 100 acres or more. So he can...
It's a big, vast space.
He can go into their property as well, and he's got agreements with them that he can go wherever he wants over their properties. His land has two rivers flowing through it, and there's this Arrow Strait power line corridor cutting through that has a bit of open space, and it seems to be this corridor that sees a lot of activity, which is strange because you've got this straight line and you've got this power line running through it.
It's not strange because, it is strange, but it fits in with things that we've heard before about these, any type of paranormal activity seemingly being attracted to power lines.
But again, very experienced woodsman, knew the area like the back of his hand, or at least thought he did, until November of 2013. He was deer hunting just across from the river on his neighbor's property when he made this really disturbing find. Now, he knew how to recognize spots where deer would bed down to rest because you would see the impression in the snow or in the grass. And the ground at the time was snow covered. And there was a spot where there were obviously three deer beds. You know, you could see it clearly. And as he gets closer to this area, he discovers that everything in the snow is showing that these three deer have been suddenly and violently killed before they could even manage to move. They were basically killed where they were sleeping or where they were sitting.
When you say killed, were they like maimed? Were they torn apart?
Well, the whole place is just splashed with blood everywhere.
So
there's hair ripped around, and it's just the most gruesome sight he's ever seen. And there was nothing solid left of the deer but hair and blood. There was no meat, no bones. And it was eerie. He had never seen a kill like it. And, you know, there's mountain lions in this area. There's plenty of bears, and he's seen plenty of kills. But this,
normally they leave something other than hair and blood.
Yeah, this was something extreme. And he thought, well, maybe there's a wolf pack in the area. Maybe this is something I just haven't seen before. So a few months go by and the winter's quite a cold one. The snow's really deep. And he wanted to go back out to this area to see if there were any more kills like this, if there was any more activity. So he would go out on his snowmobile, and he would pack down the snow so he could create walking paths, basically.
Yep.
And when he returned to this area where he had seen what he ended up calling the blood massacre, because it was just so gruesome, he found something even more surprising. There was a long line of footprints impressed into the snow. Now, the footprints were huge. They were about 18 inches long and made by something that was obviously walking on 2 feet. And because the snow conditions... I mean, they weren't good enough to make out a really crisp definition, but he could see that the stride was huge.
It's
it was enough. Like 8 feet between the prints, just a huge distance. So he started to mark out these tracks with a stick. He'd never seen anything like it before. And he actually started to follow the trail that where they were leading. And he's following this huge gate, these massive tracks, and they eventually come to a river. And he can see in the snow that whatever it was has jumped across the river in a single leap. So he crosses the river and he keeps following the tracks.
How wide was the river?
Oh, he doesn't say, but...
But enough, obviously.
It's enough to make it significant, where he can't even do that. He's got to wade through the water to get across. And from the conditions on the other side, he still followed the tracks, but eventually he lost the trail. Now, he lost the trail not because the ground cover changed or there was the snow ran out or anything like that. He lost the trail because the trail just stopped. The footprints just ended in the snow. And there was nowhere they could have gone. There was no trees nearby that whatever it was could have grabbed onto. There was no indication that it jumped anywhere. He looked all around the area. These footprints just stopped. And, you know, that's something that Joshua Cutchin and Timothy Renner pointed out in their recent books, that this is the common kind of thing that you see. These tracks just go nowhere and then vanish. Now, he was mystified, and this is the first time Randy has even entertained the thought that, my God, this could be the big guy. This could be Bigfoot. Like, he just never even entertained it. Now, he actually turned to the internet to find information on Bigfoot. He'd never even looked into it. And one of the first things he found was this Minnesota-based Sasquatch Research Association, the SRA. It's run by a guy named Jim Hebb, and he emailed Jim and sent through photos he had taken of the tracks. And according to Mike, the author of the book, apparently Jim said, "Yep, you got yourself a squatch." That's basically all he said, which I think is a great quote. "You got yourself a squatch." This is around April of 2014. This is a few months later, Randy started to notice other weird stuff around his property that he hadn't quite seen before. And this was strange alignments of sticks and branches.
Oh, yep. Okay, yeah. I agree with that statement before. He's got a squatch.
Those weird kind of just formations that, you know, some critics say when there's a storm or when there's enough wind, the branches will just fall down in these strange positions.
Oh, that just happened to fall down in pyramid-style shapes.
Well, Mike is like, yeah, obviously that happens. But from what Randy was seeing, they seemed to defy logic. They couldn't possibly be formed naturally. Like, there were strange X marks. Some of them looked like bizarre, like the letter A or a triangle formed perfectly. There were strange Y formations. There was weird teepees that were set up with, you know, dozens and dozens of very large branches all angled up into this formation. If you look closely at some of them, the sticks leaning together, the smaller branches were actually woven together.
Mm.
So something had taken the time to sit there and make sure they're all intricately linked. And Randy specifically feels that the Y shape has some kind of special meaning to these creatures. Now he thinks that it's a warning or a sign of some sort, because the Y shape, he feels, is really deliberate, like they convey some kind of message. Now, there was a second thing besides the structures that became a regular sighting for Randy on his property and the neighbor's properties. That deer kill he found in November 2013 was like a blood massacre. That was just appearing everywhere now. He was seeing other kills, lots of them, all consisting of a massive area of deer hair littering over the ground, tons of blood, but no body parts, no bones, no, like, nothing left of the carcass, which, if it's any other animal, there's something left of the carcass generally. His first find in 2013, Mike said, seemed to indicate three deer killed all at once and it was splashed with blood. He's had no other finds like that, but he assumes that one was very fresh and that the blood dries and fades over time. Randy says he finds approximately eight of these every year in all seasons. And added to this, while just in the act of hiking around the area, he keeps finding deer skulls really regularly. Also bucks and does, like decapitated heads, just left in random places in the woods. And that's just like what Timothy Renner started to experience when he was talking about his, you know, Sasquatch sightings or whatever it was. He would find just skulls everywhere on the paths, almost left for him as if, as in a message. You remember Renner described going down one pathway and then when he didn't see anything. And when he was coming back, there was a skull placed perfectly in the tree at his eyesight level, almost as if, here's a little gift for you, or perhaps
make it obvious,
a warning.
Yeah, I mean, the skulls can be interpreted as being a warning of some kind, but I think that for the most part, when they're just, you know, dried out skulls, it's like, oh yeah, it's not a big deal. But the depiction there of decapitated deer heads,
oh yeah,
that's
heads
a little bit
everywhere.
More unsettling. It's actually quite violent and dark.
Yeah, it's funny how some people say it's a message of love.
No, it's like a decapitated deer skull.
It's like on Valentine's Day when I want to give my wife a message.
Just give her a horse's head.
Just a decapitated animal with a bunch of roses goes down really well. And you know, Mike writes that when he was writing this was kind of late 2020. And at the time, Randy had found about 24 skulls and close to 50 kill sites. He basically says he wouldn't want to be a deer on this guy's property. Now, the first person to actually see something on the property was Randy's bandmate, Chris Cornish. He was staying in a guest trailer on the property one night because they were getting ready to go out on a tour. And Mike says he contacted Chris via Facebook, and he said that initially he had this really spooky, unnerving feeling about the place when he first stayed there. And obviously there were strange nocturnal animal noises. But some of the noises sounded like they came from something really large, you know, and right outside the trailer. And he said they sounded like the Tasmanian Devil cartoon character.
Oh.
Remember that Looney? That's a really good impression. The Looney Tunes Taz.
We play it for my kids, so I know it.
Randy had heard these sounds as well. He agreed that, yeah, that's what they sound like. They sound like the Tasmanian Devil. Now, Chris told Mike that he actually wrote him a little description of what he experienced. He said, I had stepped out to have a cigarette and was sitting on a picnic table. And while I was sitting there, some movement caught my eye across the yard and I saw a pair of reddish-coloured eyes reflecting off the yard light. It happened very quickly, he said, and I couldn't make out any definitive shape, but they were well above the ground. I couldn't say how far up because his yard has a slope to it. So this is the first kind of sighting of something, that glowing eye shine or those glowing red eyes, which we hear about so often.
Well, it's validating. It's not just simply in his imagination or he's getting carried away with something.
Yeah. And about a month later, Randy and his wife, Terry, they're sound asleep in bed and this horrible noise outside their bedroom window wakes them up and he looks at the clock and it's 4 a.m. and all he can hear outside is this. Which is the Tasmanian Devil sound. Now, Randy said it actually reminded him of the famous Sierra sounds.
Yes.
If you just Google the Sierra sounds, if you've never heard them before. It's
the Ron Moorhead stuff.
Yeah, classic chattering sound of Bigfoot. It sounds like almost like a language. And Randy was convinced that he was hearing some kind of chatter, some kind of language outside the window. Now, the activity continued. He kept on finding skulls. He kept on finding these kills. And then one day when he was doing some research online, he just stumbled across the idea of leaving offerings, you know, like food, trinkets, you know, peanut butter, stuff like that. It sounded like a good idea to Randy. So in May of 2015, he set up a gifting area and he chose his neighbor's land, which I think is brilliant.
Smart. Yeah, it's very smart.
Didn't do it on his land, made sure it was on his neighbor's land. And it was a place, obviously, he had permission to go.
And this gifting is obviously where we're going with the peanut butter.
Well, it was close to where he had found that first deer kill and those footprints in the snow, so we thought it makes sense to have it there. Mm. And he found some fallen logs not too far into the woods, and he just laid out a few small trinkets. Like, there was a little plastic flashlight. There was a rubber bracelet from a Taylor Swift concert. I don't know how he got that. Some shiny CDs and things like that. And The question was, would there be a reaction? Would anything happen? And indeed, something did happen, Mike writes. Randy checked the gifting area from time to time, and he found that most of the items remained untouched, but one thing he did leave there was marbles. He put marbles inside the wood, just kind of squished them in. All the marbles were gone. They'd be completely disappeared. He'd replace them, and then they'd be gone again. Now, Mike points out, and Randy knew this as well, I mean, it could be raccoons. It could be some other animal that likes shiny things. Yeah. Even birds would probably grab a marble. But it was just strange. But this was the moment. The point is, he had taken this extra step. Like, it had gone from just seeing the activity. He had made this willing choice to start interacting with it, to actually put his will out there and start inviting it in.
And this is the trigger kind of thing. It's almost like, I feel like this is leaving... Maybe it's a trap, like it's actually setting up a trap for people because it starts, you know, encouraging you by doing this kind of stuff and leaving clues for you. And human beings are naturally inquisitive. And then all of a sudden, you're just led down the path of your interacting with it. And that's exactly what it wants.
Well, it turned out that his neighbors were seeing far more than they let on as well. He had a friend named Ron Shaw, who wasn't his direct neighbor, but lived close by. And Ron was a big fan of shooting. And he had a bunch of guns and he'd have people over and have shooting classes, you know, have targets on his property. And when they had this small group of people assembled for one of his, you know, shooting events, they heard like hoots and chest thumps just off in the forest near the range, you know, like really loud kind of guerrilla type sounds. And while they were shooting, like you'd be lining up a shot and you just get hit in the head by a plum or an acorn or something would be thrown from the forest line and smack you in the face and, you know, you'd miss your shot. So it's like, you know, they were pissed off that there was so much firing going on in the forest. And after dark, when they started to get their high-powered torches out and shine them into the tree line, they swore that they saw, first of all, the eye shine. They saw eyes looking back at them, but also the shape of something.
Yeah.
Some kind of humanoid shape.
Yeah.
Now,
large, obviously.
Yeah, back on Randy's property, the stick structures, the deer kills continued month after month. Then in November of 2017, something changed. Now, he only has very limited information from this incident, Mike says, because the witnesses don't want to get their names out there. Basically, it's a couple that he calls Junior and Selena. They were from St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is about 150 miles away. But they have a hunting cabin, which is close to Randy's property, and they are out there for the hunting season. And there was a night in November when they were driving late at night. It was about 3 a.m., and they saw this huge black-haired bipedal creature in a ditch along the highway near Randy's driveway. It was just a fleeting glimpse, but it was enough for them to stop their car and turn around and wonder what the hell they had just seen.
What was it doing?
Just hiding down in the ditch, just like crouching down. But when they turned around to get a second look, obviously it was gone. Now, weirdly, things slowed down in 2016 and 2017. There wasn't that much activity. There was this weird lull. But then everything ramped up again in 2018. Every winter, Randy and Terry, they would go to the Sportsman's Lodge fishing resort, which was close by, and they'd basically work there for 3 months, and they'd actually live on site. It must have been further away from their home, so it was easier for them to just stay at the resort.
Yep.
And they would do like administrative duties and just help out running the place. So when they finally got back after 3 months, they found the outer pane of glass in their kitchen window was completely smashed. And there was nothing left behind that showed, you know, something had been thrown at it. There was no rock or anything. It was just smashed. And the broken area was about 7 feet off the ground. And it was like an oval head shape. So it's like,
had it gone smack straight into the glass?
Something had come up to the glass to take a peek into the kitchen and just been an idiot.
Yeah, as we
and
know they
stuck
are.
Their head through the glass. Now, who does that sound like?
Yeah, it's definitely Bigfoot.
Now, summer came after this, and this is where Randy decided to put up his first trail camera to try and capture what on earth was going on. And he actually attached this to a rain gutter on the outside of the house. And in mid-August, though, he just found the camera tossed into the front yard. And when he examined it, he could see that whatever had taken it off the gutter hadn't just ripped it off. Like, there was no damage to the gutter. There was no damage to the strap. Something had unbuckled the strap and unfastened it and slid it off and then thrown it into the garden. Something with dexterity.
Fingers, yeah.
It needed fingers to do it. And the weirdest thing is the mechanism wasn't triggered at all. There was no photos at all on this thing. Like, he had wildlife and deer and, you know, the occasional bear trigger it. But whatever took it off didn't set the camera off. They just can't figure out how they did it.
Yeah, they seem to be resistant to the sensors. They seem to be, possibly because they're interdimensional, they're able to pass through our technology like they're not there.
And then he started to find Y-shaped sticks everywhere. And after this event, like, it was some kind of message, whatever the Y means. Later that same month, he was preparing for the deer hunting season, and he was repairing some of the blinds that he has in trees. You know, where you climb up and you sit in the deer blind and watch for your prey. And as he was hammering, he'd be like, whack, whack, whack. And then in the distance, he'd hear, whack, whack, whack.
Was it mimicking him?
Yeah. Then he'd knock four times and it'd be whack, 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 whack. So, and this went on for like 7 minutes, just whatever it was, just copying his hammering sounds. That was the first wood knock he'd experienced. So all the classic, you know, you can check box all the classic Bigfoot type activity going on here. But so far, apart from the footprints disappearing, and I guess, the trail camera is kind of paranormal too. It's pretty normal. That spring after the melt, though, Randy found what he thought to be a new Bigfoot track out in the woods. And while examining it, he heard a growl nearby that didn't sound like any animal he'd ever heard before. And when he was exploring the area, he found yet another deer kill. But this time, in addition to the mass of hair, there was a small piece of hide stuffed up between the branches of a tree several feet above the ground with a Y-shaped stick again. What are these Y-shaped sticks trying to say? Is it some kind
of... Are they fashioning them, or are they just finding branches that happen to have a Y shape to them?
They're just finding branches and they're kind of breaking them off so it's a perfect Y.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you would assume.
Yeah.
And then June the 15th, he found something that was even more surprising. He was walking along one of the trails that he knows, again, like the back of his hand. He'd just been there a few days before. But now, all of a sudden, there was this... It looked like a hunting blind that humans would make. Like, just all these woods, sticks and branches piled up into this elaborate structure. And he just couldn't figure out how it had gotten there so quickly because there was just so many pieces of wood. Like, it was really elaborate. It would have taken someone days to build it. And he could see how there was an entrance to it where you could kind of climb in and then something big could sit inside there virtually unseen.
Are you saying it's almost like it was... materialized there?
Well, it was put together really quickly. Like, he was just there a couple of days earlier and there was nothing there. And it was actually where you would put some kind of blind. Like, it was right next to a deer trail. So then Mike starts questioning what the strategy of it is. Because if you're a human sitting in a deer blind, you've got a projectile weapon. You're sitting there with a gun waiting for the deer to go past. If you're a big Sasquatch sitting in a deer blind...
Infrasound.
What is your tactic?
Infrasound. You hear it quite frequently of people describing that aren't even looking for Bigfoot, just hunters that are out in the wilderness that have had fleeting brushes with these things. They've described that all of a sudden they're overwhelmed with feelings of anxiety, overwhelmed with, you know, just fear, panic, and it seems to be being exposed to some infrasound.
Well, that would explain... why three deer lying down in the snow would be killed without knowing anything was even on top of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they were paralyzed or something.
And what did I only say recently? Remember how I was talking about infrasound in the paranormal?
Mm.
And one thing that it seems to be capable of doing is if you hit someone with infrasound at the right frequency, you can paralyze them.
Right.
Same with animals, deers.
But at this point in the story, Mike and Randy aren't even thinking like that.
Yeah, of course not.
And remember, Mike is not a paranormal guy.
Yeah.
Like, he had that weird experience when he was young, but he's a flesh and blood Bigfoot guy, right? He doesn't like entertaining the woo side of things.
For the moment, so though,
his theory was that Bigfoot sits inside this blind, and then when a deer comes past, he goes, "Ah!" and just sticks and branches go everywhere, and he just grabs the deer.
He just goes,
"Yeah." So it hadn't been used, though. Obviously, it was still there. Now, 5 days later, this is June the 20th. Randy was getting ready for a music event, and he was getting his truck, you know, nice and clean, and he had his truck, you know, polished and waxed and looked beautiful. And then he was driving back to his property and then he realized, oh crap, the driveway's all muddy, right? You know, that feeling where you got a clean car.
No,
I don't want to get it dirty.
So he gave up eventually.
He took this other route to get to his property where he knew it would be along nice grass and he could just park on the grass and then walk the rest of the way. And when he did this, it was along that corridor, that power corridor, where it's like a clean piece of...
Is it high-tension power lines?
Yeah, it's just running through and there's not many trees there. So he drives through here and something caught his eye. It was this strange-looking reddish-brown mass that was low to the ground. Now, it looks similar to a dead pine tree, but he didn't remember seeing it before. So as he reached the parking point, he stopped and got out of his truck and started to walk back towards whatever it was he saw. Now, Mike writes that time stood still because he reached a point about 75 yards from this reddish mass when the reddish mass stood up and started to stare at him. He realized it was a bipedal hair-covered creature that had been crouching down low. And he looked at this thing. It was clearly around 9 feet tall, absolutely huge. And all he could do was stand there and just go, oh my God, they actually exist. I was right. They actually exist. And he's just staring at this creature and the creature's staring back at him. He could make out the face. It looked like there was a bit of a beard hanging down as well. And there came a point in this stare-off where he just for a brief, like not even a second, he looked down at his feet because he was standing on uneven ground and he just shuffled his feet slightly and looked down at his feet. When he looked up, he just caught sight of it entering into the brush.
Running?
Well, it was moving very fast. I don't know about running. It basically disappeared into the woods. Now, he thought, why did I take my eyes off it? He was really annoyed at himself. But when he was thinking about it later, he actually wondered, I wonder if the creature had anything to do with that. Like, why did I look down at that moment? It was just a really strange thing to do. Did it mentally influence me?
Yeah, it's using Bigfoot mind tricks.
Yeah, it was all over very quickly, but I mean, a huge moment of validation for him. He ended up taking a cast of what looked like a knuckle print in the ground where it was bending down. And then shortly after this, he started to hear, this is a couple of days later, he heard ravens going frantic out in the forest. And he walked out to investigate, and that's when he started to find, like, ravens' heads and bodies of ravens with their heads twisted off.
Oh.
Just kind of scattered around.
Jeez, they got to be quick to get ravens.
They're our friends. They're our peaceful forest friends.
Well, I must say, I mean, I know you're being facetious, but perhaps we should be questioning, why are you continuing to pursue this thing then?
Well, he wants more than just seeing it. He wants photos. He wants evidence.
It's twisting off birds' heads like some nut job.
Yeah, but there's no situation where any of us are going to be having this activity after seeing one of these things and not be curious enough to investigate.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, yes, you and I can sit here and go, oh, we know it always ends badly, but the average punter.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even you and I, we would probably go out.
Yeah, we would. Yeah.
And then his wife, Terry, had a strange experience. She was mowing in their yard. And, you know how you do lines when you're mowing.
Did she go over like a reddish brown patch?
No, she was mowing and just finished this section. And then she turns the mower around and there's a Y-shaped stick planted directly where she had just been seconds earlier.
So it's like it was following her.
Either something had tossed it without her seeing or hearing it, or, you know, it had just appeared there from other means. And she hated this activity. She was absolutely terrified of what was going on. She didn't have
any curiosity
or anything like that. She was just like, I want this out of my property. I'm sick of it. Now, there's one more incident that occurred that month. The SRA, the group that I mentioned earlier, the Sasquatch Research Association of Minnesota, had encouraged Randy to talk out loud to the Bigfoot while he was in the woods. Like, basically be walking out there and say, hi, my name's Randy. I mean you no harm. I just want to communicate. I just want to get to know you. Let's come to an arrangement. Let's make a deal. You know, stuff like that. Just openly talking.
Did he get a rock to the head?
Well, he felt like a dickhead doing this, he said. He just felt absolutely ridiculous. But he would do it and take pictures while he was doing it. And then one day when he was back at his house, he was sitting on his couch looking at the photos he had taken. When out of nowhere, there's this huge thud on the side of the house and the whole house shook. It was like an earthquake. And he jumps up completely startled and he hears this high-pitched female-sounding voice say, Randy, Randy. Now he goes out the door, he looks around the property, goes around the entire house. There's nothing. Now, it's extremely disturbing, obviously, but he immediately wonders, because he's just been out in the forest saying, hi, my name's Randy. Have they followed him home and called out his name? What is this?
Do you know what this is? This is so similar, though, to those reports we were just discussing about disembodied voices.
Yeah.
Like, and you know what? It didn't even cross my mind, I don't think, I thought this was some type of entity that's luring people in. But I'm wondering if it could be Sasquatch as well, because what's being described there was a story of a woman by the name of Marie, I believe it was a pseudonym. But essentially what had happened was she had two bulldogs and a much smaller dog. I can't remember the breed of the smaller dog. But all the dogs wanted to go outside. She was in a cabin, isolated cabin, you know, in some campground.
Yeah.
And she wanted to go outside to take, because the dogs wanted to go out to pee. So she let all the dogs out. She saw the two bulldogs head in one direction and then the other dog she wasn't paying attention to. But this was a little dog that she was really focused on and it kind of disappeared. So the dog disappeared and she's waiting and waiting and the bulldogs finished doing what their business. And she claims that she heard this whimpering. Like, and she thought that it was a little dog.
Yeah, right.
And she starts heading in the direction, just in the tree line in the dark. Like, she couldn't see anything. She said it was pitch black and she heads towards it. when just as she's about to hit it, she hears like sniffing behind her and she turns around. It's a little dog.
Mm.
So whatever was whimpering in the distance,
luring her out.
Right. So she's like, oh, Alfie, there you are. Right. Just like what happened with Randy here. She said this at the tree line. So she starts walking back to the cabin, like relaxed now, going, oh, I don't know what that was. It's fine. She says, as she starts heading back in this robotic tape recording style mimicking of her voice, all she hears is, Alfie, Alfie,
yeah,
coming from the tree line.
You get the sense this is the same.
It's the same thing.
Because he doesn't say it's a female voice. He says it's like a female type voice.
Yeah, it's mimicking.
And he says in the aftermath, because it was really disturbing in the moment, but once he had time to think about it, he actually started to wonder whether he had heard it with his ears or whether it had been inside his head. Like it was some kind of projection inside his mind.
Did his wife hear it?
No.
Okay.
Now, he later had people try and bang the side of the house to see if they could recreate the sound.
You can't replicate it.
There was nothing that even came close. And the spot where the thud was where that window had been broken earlier, where something had stuck its head in.
Hmm.
Now, in August of 2019, Terry's daughter, his wife's daughter, Samantha Stomberg, she's 28 years old. She had just been to a wake in the local area and she was driving home. It was quite late. It was 10 p.m. And she said, when I got home, her mom and stepdad's house, on the right side of the road, she said, entering the woods, she saw a large, hairy Bigfoot, 8 to 9 feet tall with long hair. And she got like a profile view of it. The next day, she said, my stepdad and I walked to where we saw it and there was a trail where it had walked and new structures made across the road from where I saw it. I can't get that image out of my head, she said. So this was an incredible corroboration for Randy, obviously. You know, someone else in the family had seen what he had seen. He wasn't going crazy. And he was happy to hear this. And when they went out to investigate, they saw more structures. But they also saw, because there was a pole, like an electricity pole, where
one of these pylons, or just a smaller one?
I'm not quite sure. Like it's wooden.
Okay.
So yep. I'm not quite sure what it's for.
But big enough.
But, well, they saw strands of reddish brown hair snagged on it. And there was a speculation that, because I think this was where the other couple had seen something as well. There's a speculation that they're using them for scratching poles. Like he's coming out like Bigfoot. Because Bigfoot...
just bring their back up against it.
Yeah, Bigfoot's quite muscly. So yeah. Maybe he doesn't have the full flexibility to reach that itch. So the only place to scratch is that nice pole.
Look, I don't want to be too skeptical though, but other creatures that do that are bears. Are there any bears around there? I
mean, there's bears everywhere.
So it could be bears.
There's bears everywhere. But I mean, she clearly saw this thing. It's 9 feet tall, standing on two legs.
But bears stand on two legs when they do that and they look like they're 9 feet tall.
Well, when she saw it, it wasn't doing that.
You can tell the difference.
Yeah, it wasn't near the pole. They just saw that when they were looking at the area.
Right.
She was convinced it was a Bigfoot. And later on, this is the fall of 2019, we're now getting into the hunting season of the year. And he had visited the gifting area. Nothing seemed to have been touched, but he noticed a buck scrape nearby. Now, this is a spot on the tree where a deer basically marks its territory. A male deer marks its territory. Now, Randy's hunter instincts are like, okay, this is a good opportunity. What I'm going to do is a mock scrape on another tree so that the buck is fooled into thinking it has a challenger and it'll come back for a challenge, right?
So what do? They rub their antlers up against a tree to knock off the bark.
They just leave a mark. Right. It's just a visual mark to, you know, mark your territory. And he put up a game camera to take pictures to see how many deer were passing in the area. You know, he's getting ready for the hunting season. This is what you do. And after this, the whole area came alive. The gifting area, which hadn't been active for years, suddenly, there were stuffed animals he had put up. They had all been teared down and like torn apart. The tiny little toy flashlight he'd left out there was snapped in two. The Taylor Swift concert bracelet.
This is important.
Was snapped.
Yep.
The few 12-inch long footprints were found nearby. The CDs were all snapped in half. And he saw all these tracks. Now, it's like it was almost pissed off that he had... He'd done something, or maybe because he'd put up a trail camera, it was pissed off.
Mm.
And after this, November the 7th...
Or attracted a lot of angry deer to its home location.
Well, he started to hear this horrible high-pitched scream erupting from the woods nearby. It sounded human. It was when he was trying to get plaster casts of the tracks. and he could hear it kind of moving off in the forest, but this horrible, horrible, you know, like a woman screaming. And later on during the hunting season, he describes being with his rifle and he's sitting in a deer blind, you know, up in the tree, and he sees a doe run past. And at first he thinks that must be pursued by a buck and it's mating season. And he waits, but a buck doesn't come through the clearing. Another doe comes through the clearing. But the doe has a horrible bloodied nose, like its snout is all messed up. And it seemed to be fleeing from something. The second one was clearly injured. Now, what was strange is the muzzle being bloodied up is not normal. Like normally predators go for the neck. So it just seemed out of place. And then later when Randy thought about it, he got the impression that the deer had been punched in the face.
I feel very bad for the deer, but I'm not surprised that Sasquatch would do that.
This is giving us an insight into the highly complex hunting techniques of this low IQ hairy hominid.
Yeah, what's the best way to deal with it? Just punch it in the face.
Hulk smash. Yeah. He just punches it in the face. That's all he knows how to do. And a month after this, this is when Michael finally got involved in the case. He got contacted by another Bigfoot researcher in Minnesota who said, look, there's this area. You can't miss out. It's like within 3 hours drive from you. You've got to contact this guy. You've got to get out there. There's so much stuff going on. So Michael, you know, when he first went out there and made friends with Randy, there's a few things he noticed straight away. Like he drove around the area and he saw immediately strange footprints in the snow that kind of looked like Sasquatch tracks, you know, the huge distance between them. He learned from people in the area that there's something weird about this particular area with roadkill.
In what way? You mean just a lot of decapitated roadkill?
No, roadkill just never stays around for long. Mm. It's just gone. It's gone quicker than you would expect whoever's responsible for it, like some state authority, to come and get it.
Like something's eating it then.
Like something is just coming and getting it. And yeah, there's bears in the area, but they're not going onto the highways or the main roads and taking roadkill. Is it an idea that something else is doing it? And then in March, Randy and Terry again, they came back from there, you know, when they go to the resort for 3 months, they came back from that. And Randy went to check the spot where he had left this peanut butter jar on the tree, and he got a surprise. The jar was still there, but completely empty. Now, there didn't seem to be any normal animal that could have done this. Like a bear would take the jar down and, you know, either destroy it and just leave it there or take it. The bear's not putting the jar back on the branch. So something had to have kind of cleaned it out, eaten all the peanut butter, and then, boom, put it back on the branch. It was just really, really strange. And 2020 would turn out to be the year of the peanut butter experiments. So after this, there was the case of Randy going out. He was going out to various properties, again, checking out the neighbors' areas. And he came across a large scattering of straw on the ground, several yards across. And clearly it looked like it had been used for bedding because there was a big impression in it, like something big had been sleeping there. And in this bedding area, just beside the straw, was the largest mass of human-looking feces he's ever seen in his life.
They're filthy.
Like a steaming pile.
Filthy creatures.
Like kilos of shit. Pounds and pounds of what looked like a human turd just sitting there. And just like hair samples, this is obviously good DNA, right?
No, it's not.
Isn't it?
You can't get DNA out of poop.
Okay, well, that's
something. It's really hard to do. I think rarely you might be able, if skin's like epithelial cells have scraped down the side of it, but it's pretty unlikely to get DNA out of poop.
Oh, well, Mike's saying it can yield DNA, but you know, maybe you know better.
It can sometimes, but the likelihood of getting it out of poop is quite low.
He said the main benefit you get is you can tell what the animal's eating.
Yep.
Obviously, you can.
Yep.
So he was about to take a photo. Randy gets his phone out and he's about to snap a photo of this mysterious poop. And immediately his phone just goes, zoom.
Shuts down.
It just shuts down. It's completely out of battery. And he knew it was 100% full. Like he had just charged it an hour earlier. He's like, what the hell is going on? And this wouldn't be the first time this has happened. Like Mike said, he had camera batteries die, SD cards wipe, just the trail cameras stopped working, electronics would be affected in weird ways. And he's like, damn, that's really annoying. I really want to get a sample. I want to take a photo and get a sample of this giant turd. So he quickly goes back to his car to get a container so he can take a sample. And it wouldn't have been 5 minutes, right? He's gone for just a small amount of time. He comes back, the giant poo is gone.
It was sucked back into another dimension.
The giant poo is gone. Super weird.
So
it's almost like the creatures were watching him, saw him discover the site and discover the giant turd, and then understood that the turd might tell human beings something about them. So when they disabled his phone somehow using their sonar or their infrasound or whatever they do.
Or their Sasquatch magic.
And then when he went to his car, they stealthily, put their poo in another dimension.
I don't think that that's sophisticated. I don't actually think they think that far ahead. Look, we know they're
stupid.
Why
would the poo be gone?
Because I think what it is, if these things are actually interdimensional, that's something that, you know, many have speculated about, that they come into our reality, but only for a short period of time. They can only last here a certain amount of time, and then it is gone.
So what you're saying is that the turd was in a kind of quantum state.
Yeah, and it only could last here for a little while, and then...
Right, it was only there because it had been observed. Once the observer was gone, it was...
Yeah, it's Schrodinger's shit.
Schrodinger's turd.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he was finding new kill sites, but this time, and Mike was with him on a couple of these, the bones were piled up super neatly, like in little, almost like a Japanese lunchbox, like in little piles, super neat piles. And as a contrast, Randy showed Mike... a wild cat kill, and that's just chaos. I think it was blood and hair and bones
flesh,
everywhere, scattered all over the place.
Yep.
And then you've got these other kills where it's just like everything lined up perfectly neatly. Now, after this, Randy was babysitting. This is a few weeks later. He had his two granddaughters with him, Bristol, who's 9, and Madison, who's 4. Now, their mother and Randy's wife, Terry, they were away for part of the day, but they knew what was going on out in the forest. And they said to Randy, do not take the girls into the forest. Like, they knew how much he loved going out there. Like, do not take them out there. And after lunchtime, however, Randy reasoned that maybe a little walk to the power line corridor would be okay, because technically that's not the woods. That's in between the woods.
No, it's not going to be okay.
So he had the girls with him and they start out, but Randy quickly thinks, I better go get my pistol. So he goes back and gets his pistol and they start out again, but he hesitates because he's left his phone behind, so he's got no camera, but he thinks, what are the odds of seeing something? So as they're heading off down the corridor, the girls, you know, playing around him and having fun, he's keeping an eye on them. And it just seemed like any other nature walk until Randy saw something unusual down below this crest that they'd came up on. Something dark was standing beside one of the highline poles, and it's where he'd seen the Bigfoot 11 months earlier, almost the exact same spot. And as it came into view, his mind is like, what is this? Is that a tree? Is that some kind of tree that I haven't seen before? And then it hits him like a ton of bricks. I'm staring at a Sasquatch. It's like it was masked from his mind. Like it wasn't clear straight away. It took a few moments just to comprehend. And it's immediately obvious it's not the same reddish-brown one he had seen before.
What color is this one?
It's solid black, and it's absolutely huge, this thing. It's 10 feet tall, easily 10 feet tall, and that's like with a bit of a hunch. The poles are all hard plastic, like have hard plastic collars around them, and he knows that they're exactly 10 feet. This thing's easily up to one of those plastic collars on the pole.
Is that to stop animals from climbing up?
Right, yeah. So it's easily 10 feet. And his first thought is that, okay, this time I'm not going to break eye contact. I'm just going to keep staring at it because I know their tricks, right? I'm not going to look at my feet. I'm just going to keep staring. And this thing's staring back at him.
But his kids are there.
The first thing he thinks of is, shit, my granddaughters, I've got to make sure they're safe. So immediately he's like, girls, still staring at it. He's like, girls, get up here, get up here, get up here. But of course, he has to look and make sure that they're fine. As soon as he turns to look for them, he sees the younger one who's completely oblivious, just like playing in the dirt or something. But then he turns and the 9-year-old is standing right next to him and her jaw is just on the ground.
So she can see it.
She sees it very quickly lope into the forest. And of course, when Randy turns back, he just gets the kind of its profile as it disappears into the woods. And they, like, she's absolutely terrified by what she's seen. She just says, Grandpa, I just saw a giant hairy man. He has to take him back to the home and explain, it's a Sasquatch and you're totally safe and everything's fine. Of course, he got his, you know, ear chewed out when the kid's parents came home.
What was it doing? Was it just standing there, or did he see anything else?
He just saw it standing there. So we don't know.
Was it aggressive? Did it have an aggressive stance or demeanor?
He doesn't say. Just a 10-foot-tall hairy beast staring back at you. Now, what was weird, though, is that the next day, in one of his blinds, he saw like a perfectly little animal skull placed there. It was like a squirrel skull or something. There's a photo of it there.
Oh, yeah, it's tiny.
And it was just placed in there. Like it's like it knew he would be there. And again, it's like a message or a gift or a threat. Randy saw it as a threat.
No, but it's doing it to continue to engage him, to getting him to get, actually more to the point, to get him to continue to engage with the phenomenon.
You think so?
Absolutely, I do.
And then there's these weird kills he started to see. Maybe you can put this one in the show notes. It's pretty...
I'm not so sure about that. That's a very graphic image.
Okay, let's leave that one.
We'll leave that one out. That's let's just describe.
Oh, it's like, I mean, we've put cattle mutilation photos in the.
I know, but that just seems to be. I don't know. It's like it's something with its guts splayed out, flattened on the ground.
Okay, basically, the weird thing about this kill is, as you can see, Aaron, none of the animal is taken. Like none of the good parts are eaten.
No.
The only thing that's missing is the heart and the liver. And there's no bite marks, right? So clearly whatever's torn into the side of the deer.
How does it even do that?
It's like hands. Hands have gone in. Because claws can't really do that. No. It's got to have the dexterity of hands to be able to go in and pull apart.
Yeah, and the dermis is a very difficult thing to do just using your hands. Like it must have had an immense amount of force.
Yeah, and why does it want the liver and the heart? It's very weird. In late May, the Sasquatch Research Organization gets in touch again and they visit the property over the weekend. They find teeth marks in the trees and they can tell it's not a bear. It just looks like almost like a human's, you know, set of teeth biting into the tree.
Yeah.
They find horse skulls hanging from the trees now. And Randy showed the group a jar of peanut butter that had been left in a tree not far from the camping area. And this spot would become known in the following months as the peanut butter zone. It became center stage for all this activity because this jar of peanut butter had the lid still on it. And when they opened it, it was still full of peanut butter, but something had gone,
with a couple of fingers.
With two fingers and just gone, oh, that feels good. And just squelched their fingers in there.
Do we know it was fingers?
It's definitely fingers.
Right.
There's two impressions in there, twice the width of human ones. And it's like, it was like a weird little message of just, or it's like it's having a little taste. Maybe it didn't like that brand of peanut butter.
Yeah, no, it doesn't like crunchy.
Now, again, he had security sensor lights in his backyard, but now he had upgraded the system to include an automated system that would send him a photo as soon as something was triggered.
Right.
So on May the 27th, he gets this notification on his phone and a photo comes through. The sensors had picked something on camera, but it wasn't a Bigfoot. It was a strange apparition, like a misty, wispy, white kind of floating wolf head that was heading towards his property.
Isn't this exactly what we've heard with the Bradshaw Ranch? Was it the Bradshaw Ranch where this happened?
I think so. This weird floating, like it had four limbs and a tail, but he also swore it had kind of wings and seemed to float through the backyard on this picture. Now, his wife was home at the time, so he quickly runs and shows her the pictures because it's taken a series of pictures of this strange thing.
Does he put the pictures in the book?
Yes. And he goes to show, he's like, oh my God, you'll never believe what I've captured. Look at this. And he goes to show it and his phone just goes, choo. And loses 100% power. And he's like, damn it. He quickly puts his phone on the charger. When his phone reboots, there's only one photo left. All the other photos have been deleted. Now, the only photo that's left is this, which he says is completely not impressive at all. And the rest of them literally showed a flying spectral wolf head coming at the property.
All that picture is, it looks like a picture of a wooded scene with some grass in front of it and what appears to be a slight, small, grayish, smoky wisp on the very left-hand side of the image.
There's a little wisp there.
It's nothing.
There's not a floating wolf's head.
Where, actually, just give me a second. Where was it that I was reading? I've got it actually here. It was in Warminster. So Warminster in England, right? So which is not too far from Stonehenge. It's not too far from Avebury. It kind of sits in this area of all strange activity that takes place. And when I was talking about that interdimensional activity that was going on, one thing that was described by, there was this guy who had been going, and I can't remember his name, because those particular notes aren't with me, but what he was doing is he was going to Warminster because there was all this UFO activity that was taking place. And the UFO activity seemed to be like this, entrancing people. It was playing with people. It was mocking people. People would go there and these orange lights would start moving around and playing for them and being, you know, kind of excited. And, yep, you know, it got to the point where these researchers were being like conned essentially by the phenomenon to go out there at night, like in the middle of the night, to see the UFOs. But it got to the point where when they were seeing UFOs, they claim that they were seeing like portals or rips in space-time appearing before them as UFOs were appearing. And what they were claiming is that they were seeing this scene where they could see pyramids and stone columns. And it looks like this ancient kind of Atlantean style site, if you think of like something like that, right? And they were just like, they had their cameras. So they're taking all these photographs of this rip in space-time of where it's dark on our side, but in that other side, you're looking at this Egyptian Atlantean style city.
Yeah.
Right. They took all these photos. As soon as they got the photos developed, guess what happened? Most of them were black and blank. Other ones just had photographs simply of concrete triangles.
Concrete triangles?
Concrete triangles.
What the hell?
Like just a concrete brick just lying on the ground. That's what their photographs were.
That's weird.
But they're like, we didn't, like we were taking photographs of what appeared to be what our eyes were showing this, yeah, this other world. And their cameras were somehow affected by it. There was one guy who, he went with a group of people, and he said that when he went with this group of people to go and look at the UFOs, for some reason, he just had this feeling to look behind him. So he spins around and looks back at his car, and he sees a figure sitting in the back seat of his car. So he counts all the people with him. He's like, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 14. He's like, hang on a second. There are only 14 people with us. So who the hell is in the back of the car? So he goes running back to the car. When he gets there, there's no one in there, right? Doors are locked. Nothing seems to be disturbed, except he looks in the back, and he unlocks the door because he realizes that a camera that he had in there had been completely deconstructed. Like everything, like every single small part of this camera had been completely deconstructed down to the lens being removed and all placed out perfectly backwards to how you'd put it together on the back seat. And it was like this phenomenon, like this interdimensional phenomenon or whatever it is. It was messing with people. And it sounds like it's kind of the same thing that's occurring here.
We'll get to something very similar to what you're describing in just a moment. But I do want to talk about the peanut butter zone, because this is where the strangeness kind of ramped up, because they decided to put up trail cameras all around this peanut butter zone, right? And they were putting out peanut butter jars pretty regularly. And the trail cameras were going off. Like they were actually getting photos back. But
of anything? Or
it was bears. So when a bear had been out there, and it's clear because you got a photo on the trail camera, and also the bear would usually destroy the peanut butter jar. Like there'd just be, you know, bits of plastic everywhere, or the jar would just be gone, right? And you could tell clearly, okay, it's a bear that's taken it. But when something else would respond, when the Bigfoots would respond, they would do a variety of things. Sometimes there would be two finger marks in the peanut butter, like I described before. Sometimes they would put the lid back on afterwards and put the jar back on the tree. Sometimes they would leave the open jar on the ground and take the lid. And sometimes the jars would just disappear. But the incredible thing was when they were taking the lids, a few weeks later, they discovered where the lids were going. And you should put this picture in the show notes, Aaron.
Yes,
because
I will.
They discovered the lids.
Yeah, you sent me this.
In another part of the woods had been organized in...
They're color coordinated.
By color in this weird design. It almost looks like a flower.
Yeah.
They've put the yellow lids as a stem and put the rest of the colors at the end as a kind of flower. So it's clearly not a bear doing that.
No.
It's clearly something else. And so the peanut butter zone was seeing all this strange activity. And bizarrely, the cameras just wouldn't catch any of this. There'd be nothing. And it doesn't make sense. Like they had four or five trail cameras just zeroed in on this peanut butter jar. And whenever the Bigfoot would take it, there'd be nothing. No trigger, no sensor triggered, nothing. Now, a few photos were taken where it clearly wasn't a bear. There was one that just showed almost like canine-like ears at the bottom of the photo, and that's it.
Oh, this dog man kind of thing that's coming through, though. This is very unsettling.
But it wasn't a wolf. It wasn't a coyote. They had no idea what it was, but it was definitely canine-looking. There was another photo that showed some kind of elongated object that could have been a hairy finger. But the weirdest one...
Well, just sticking in from the edge of the
shot. Edge of the frame. But the weirdest one was what looked like something with pinkish hair sitting with a branch in front of its face, eating the peanut butter like it was trying to mask its face with a branch.
Pinkish hair?
Yeah, it had pink hair.
But a Bigfoot, though?
Yeah, well, they don't know. It was something eating the peanut butter with pink hair with a bush in front of its face. But it's so hard to make out. You can't really see what's going on.
It's like a Rorschach test for Bigfoot.
Is it a Rorschach test? Is it a feminist Bigfoot? Eating peanut butter, fighting the patriarchy in the forest? Who knows? Why would it have pink hair? It's bizarre. And then Randy started to talk again to the Sasquatch. Like, he would say, are you angry that there's trail cameras up? Do you want me to take them down? And he ended up saying, like, I want you to give me a deer's skull. And the next day he found a deer's skull in his front yard. So there's definitely reaction and understanding of what's going on.
Yes, there's a dialogue between them.
But then within his home, he started to see poltergeist-like activity would start.
Mm-hmm.
So his kids would notice that the television would turn itself on at night and the lights would come on and off by themselves. All sorts of weird stuff like that was going on.
So it's in the home now.
When Mike found out about this, he said to Randy, look, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I have a friend. He calls her Elizabeth in the book. He says, look, I trust her. She's a sensitive. She's got some psychic ability. I would love to introduce her to your home and we can get another opinion on what's going on. And amazingly, Randy was like, yeah, bring her in. Let's do this. Now, when Elizabeth arrived, the first thing she says is, well, you've got much more than Bigfoot going on here. She says, there's spirits here and there's more than one kind. She immediately starts describing a close family friend to Randy who's passed away. And he's amazed because she just gets the description spot on.
And she says, couldn't have known this.
She couldn't have known. She says, look, this is almost like a protector for you. It's nothing to worry about. The turning on of the TV, yes, it's a little bit weird, but it's not negative. It's just spirits, okay? Just try not to pay too much attention to it. But she also says the whole property is completely swarming with nature spirits and elementals.
Oh.
They're absolutely everywhere. She says, this kind of explains what's going on. She agrees that Bigfoot creatures are more than flesh and blood animals, but she's not sure that all the activity that they're witnessing is Bigfoot. She's convinced that some of the like trail cameras disappearing and weird things being left on the lawn and some of the sticks and all that sort of stuff is other spirits doing it. It's not necessarily Bigfoot.
Could it be just simply that it's parasitic in a way? It's almost like there's Bigfoot activity going on, but when you start interacting with the Bigfoot, it's enough to trigger other things.
Yeah. Well, there's something about the whole area because she says the weird wolf head thing that was floating on the camera. She says this is due to some Native American shamanic magic that was practiced in the past in this area. And it's almost like a tulpa that was created and it's still hanging around.
Yep.
She says, again, nothing to worry about. Don't worry about the floating wolf head. It's not going to hurt you. It's just like this weird thing that's here. And then when they go and start walking up on the land, Elizabeth just starts walking ahead of them, almost like she knows where she's going. And she goes straight to the spot where Randy has seen first the redhead Sasquatch and then the giant 10-foot-tall blackhead Sasquatch. And she stands right in that place. And they haven't told her anything. They haven't told her about what he's seen. They just said, look, there's some weird stuff going on, maybe Bigfoot activity, but we're not sure. She walks straight to this spot and she goes, yep, this is where they're coming in. This is their portal. It's right here. It's huge. There's this massive portal here. She says, this is where they come and go. This is their entry point. And she's convinced that this is some kind of rip in the dimension. Now, it's bizarre because she doesn't know that there's been sightings there. She walks straight to that spot. She also mentions to Randy, and this made me think of your segment, last week and the week before. She warns him about letting the children play here in the evenings especially. She says, make sure that you always have an eye on them. Don't let them go into the woods by themselves. She says, there are some dangers here and there's things that could be harmful to a child. And she says, I don't mean Sasquatch. There's other spirits and things here. She doesn't go into any more detail than that. Now, where we get to the truly bizarre stuff was in August of 2020. Randy had invited the SRA friend, John Badger, who was with that Sasquatch research group, to spend a couple of days with him at the property to see what was going on. And they went to do a nocturnal stakeout. They were sitting in one of the tree stands near this gifting area, near the peanut butter zone. And while sitting in the stand together, it was about 11 p.m., they suddenly saw this orange light about 60 yards away. It was this weird, not an orb, it was a rectangle, like a vertical rectangle.
An electric rectangle?
Yeah, hovering in the sky. It's a few yards in size, and Randy's watching it, and he didn't say anything. He saw it kind of shimmering, almost like the Aurora Borealis or something, just this weird orange rectangle. And eventually he's like, John, can you see that? And John's like, yeah, I didn't know whether you could see it. I didn't say anything, but yeah, there's a giant orange rectangle there. And they're both watching this thing when two large orbs of light shoot out of this vertical orange rectangle and they're floating through the air in the direction of the peanut butter zone.
Please now, tell me they're transformed into Sasquatch.
These guys, they've got no idea what they're watching, but they just sit there in silence as they watch these two glowing white orbs floating through the forest. But what's weird is eventually they hear heavy footsteps where the orbs are. And they watch a bit through the trees, but and they can see that now there's only one orb and there's now a Bigfoot creature clearly visible from the upper chest up to its head.
So what's below it?
Walking. Well, they can't see because there's brush below. And it's walking towards this area and it's got glowing red eyes. Now, Randy immediately recognizes it as the same shape as that red one he'd seen earlier. But the only thing that's different now is that it's glowing, completely glowing white. Its body looked as if it was literally made out of light. Almost like the same light that this fiery rectangle thing was made out of. And there's that orb hovering behind it, and they start heading towards the peanut butter zone. Now he watches as the Bigfoot grabs the peanut butter, turns, and starts walking, but eventually they're looking, and now there's not one orb, there's two orbs again.
Is there a flying jar of peanut butter below?
No, they can't see the peanut butter. They just see two orbs. They fly back towards the orange triangle, go into the orange triangle, and it just goes shoop, and disappears.
Yeah, that's the interdimensional nature of this stuff.
And it's right at the spot where the psychic Elizabeth had been a few days later saying, this is where they come through.
Do you think it could be something else masquerading as a Sasquatch? Like, do you think it could be another entity that's just making it look like a Sasquatch because that's the easiest way to...
Why would you look like a Sasquatch? Why not something else?
I don't know. Maybe it's what's getting...
If they're trying to be inconspicuous, being a 10-foot-tall, hairy man-beast...
Not that inconspicuous.
...is not the right idea.
Mm.
I think, as we've heard from other stories, this is just what they are. This is why they haven't been captured.
Yep.
This is why there's no body.
Yep.
This is why you can't catch them on a trail camera.
That's why there's no poop.
This is why their poop vanishes. They can transform into energy balls and go through these orange portals and disappear into another dimension.
The fact he's seeing this and is not, I mean, he's claiming he's not familiar, right, with the other literature of Bigfoot sightings out there. He's a flesh and blood kind of guy. Yet again, you've got another person who is dealing with the interaction with a Sasquatch and very rapidly finding out the high strangeness side of them.
Yeah.
It seems to happen to so many people that are involved in cryptozoology.
Now, a few weeks later, something absolutely terrifying happens to Randy. Terry's away from work at the time and he's spending, Randy's asleep in his bedroom at night with the door locked and his pistol is close by and he's got a watchdog now who sleeps in the room with him. Now, on this particular night, he suddenly wakes up because the dog, Annie, is growling furiously, clearly in defensive mode, gritting its teeth at the door, the bedroom door. And as Randy wakes up, he's like, what the hell is going on? He looks at his bedroom door and the knob is going, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, like something's trying to get in. Now, obviously, he wants to reach over and grab his pistol, and that's when he realizes he can't move. He's paralyzed.
Yep.
Oh, crap. But the thing with this encounter is that the door handle stops shaking, the dog stops growling, and he can move again. And there's no abduction. There's no weird hairy rape in the middle of the night.
Does he have missing time?
He no missing time. It was maybe just to scare him. I mean,
yeah, it's to demonstrate what they're capable of. And this is the thing, right? Being asleep in bed is probably the most vulnerable place, one of the most vulnerable places you can be. So it's like, we can get to you.
And then within a couple of days of this incident, inside his house, he found a pair of his pants that had been left in his bedroom. They had been pissed on. And it was the type of piss, it was the type of urine that stunk so bad that he knew it wasn't his dog, and his dog was locked up. His dog was locked up in the doghouse. Like, there's no way the dog could have done it. There was no one else in the house. It's like something had pissed on his pants on purpose. And it was just the most rancid, inhuman, almost demonic, hellish stink you could ever imagine. Like, he had to burn his pants. They were just so horrible.
This is starting to become, though, I mean, the word you use there, demonic, it is starting to cross over into that, because when people have described interacting with poltergeists that become more on the demonic side of things, you get those disgusting elements that pop in.
Yeah, and he's convinced that it's Sasquatch breaking into his home, and he would go out into the forest and go, stay out of my fucking house! Leave me alone! This has gone too far! And he's just screaming at them, just letting him have it. And when Mike finally spoke to him again, Mike had to calm him down and say, well, hang on, let's just think about this. Think about how big the Sasquatches you've seen have been, like 10 feet tall. They're not coming into your kitchen and, you know, stealthily going up to you. If they want to rip your door off of your bedroom, they're going to rip it off.
Yeah.
Or if they're in your kitchen, it's going to be like a bull in a china shop. There's going to be a mess everywhere. It's clearly not Sasquatch in your home. Like, there has to be. And remember what Elizabeth said. There's other spirits around. And it's Mike who actually suggests that there's lore talking about how it's demons that use urine and feces. So,
precisely.
This is kind of the final event that occurs. And at the end of the book, Mike said he asks Randy, you know, what should our final line be? And Randy just says, right to be continued, because this is still going on.
Yeah.
Like, the last encounter was in 2021, just a few weeks ago.
Look, I want the content because I like hearing these stories, but I also think that maybe there's an ethical concern here that you should probably back off.
Yeah.
You should probably be very careful, because we've seen this before. You start, and it's following actually a natural progression of what we see with this stuff. Now you're crossing into this element of demonic kind of behavior. I'm not saying they're demons, but what I am saying is that you're messing with something which is far more powerful, and it wants you to interact. And so it escalates so that you continue to interact with it. And then we know what happens to some people. Their lives are absolutely destroyed.
And again, it's like you're saying, it's likely not the, I mean, it might be, but it's likely not the Sasquatch that's doing this to him. And like the psychic had said, it's other things that are causing a lot of the other activity. It's not just this one entity. So in the end, I mean, it's interesting because Mike is saying, you know, the rest of the flesh and blood Bigfoot crowd probably thinks I'm crazy now, but I don't care. I believe my witness. I've seen too many strange things now. And these are the six weird factors that make me entertain the non-flesh and blood hypothesis. Number one, the red eyes that people see. What the hell is that? The draining of batteries and electronics failing. There's the evasion of motion detectors that doesn't make sense. How can they get in front of these trail cameras and take things and do things without anything being triggered?
Because they can bend the laws of physics in our reality.
The vanishing footprints in the snow is another one. The suggestion of some kind of mind speak, you know, hearing them call your name in your mind. And of course, transforming into freaking orbs and coming out of an orange portal.
It's kind of a warning.
That also is an indicator.
No, for me, it's the Wolfman, you know, element that's popping up there. This is something that I'm pretty sure it was a Bradshaw Ranch we heard of smoke-like forms appearing and Wolfmen, like large bipedal humanoid wolves stepping out of them. The same thing I think has been reported.
That's Skinwalker Ranch stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it is. And
big wolves.
Yep.
Yeah, dinosaurs.
Yeah, with dinosaurs and God knows what else. So it's, I don't know, it's intriguing, and it's very fascinating to listen to, but probably not directly interacting with. things can't necessarily go well.
You shouldn't say that because we want more stories. You should
I know that, but I feel bad about doing it. But yeah, you know, a lot of
I think the ultimate, you know, explanation or the ultimate kind of final word on this is seeing a window into another dimension open up.
Oh, I mean,
then you're just like, well, what else is in there?
Yeah, everything. Everything you can possibly imagine is in there. And it wants to come here. It wants to interact with us. I don't know for what purpose. I don't know if it's for good or bad. I tend to think it's for bad purposes.
A funny thing the psychic lady said is they don't belong here, but they want to make the forest their home.
Interesting.
See, that's the thing. People always think, well, you know, the forest is the natural habitat of Sasquatch. Like, that's where they live. They love it there. But maybe it's not. You know, maybe where they're from is completely different, but they just found this dimensional portal and they kind of like the smell of the fresh air.
Is it because there's a change in government? All of a sudden, these interdimensional gateways are opening up everywhere and all these Sasquatches are just spilling over into our reality?
Well, there's a change of government on their side.
Yeah.
They're refugees.
Yeah, we can't stop them now.
Dimensional refugees.
It's just all on top of us.
Yeah, well, that's what she said. They don't belong here, but they're trying to stay here. It's almost, you know, it's an interesting way to think of it. It goes against the idea that, well, the forest is their natural home.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not.
You're right there. I don't necessarily think that either, that it's a natural. I mean, if you think about it from the flesh and blood cryptozoological perspective, of course it's completely natural because they would be flesh and blood.
Yeah.
They would need to have vast swathes of land to be able to have a population to reproduce. But we know now there's just so many stories, and yes, they're anecdotal, and yes, they're from, you know, eyewitness reports of people that we don't know. But in saying that, there are just so many of them of people that seem to be sane, normal people that have high strangeness incidents with these things, where you can't go, it's only flesh and blood. No, I don't think so. I think there's more to it than that. And, you know, speaking of, you know, strange things that people are seeing, I mean, strange things are seen everywhere, but I want to point you in the direction of this dash cam footage, which was picked up by the Daily Mail. Yes, I know it's a Daily Mail, but of course you're going to get this kind of stuff on there. But
it is weird footage.
It is very strange footage. So this was captured at 8 p.m. It was just before 8 p.m. on Sunday night. So the Sunday night that's just passed here in Australia, it was just south of Sydney on the Hume Highway. And it was captured by a man by the name of Mitch Kuhn, and the footage shows what appears to be this small childlike figure just suddenly appearing from the darkness on the left side of this four-lane motorway. And what it does, it kind of just starts moving over this left lane. So the car is in the middle lane, and there's left lane. You can see this thing walking across. Now, it's reported as being a child that looks no older than six, but I'm thinking it looks even younger than that. And it appears to be wearing a blue parka. But when you look at the footage, it doesn't look like it's a child wearing a blue parka. It looks like it's something else. And now, I'm not sure. I want you to look at it for yourself to see what you think you can determine from it. It almost looks like it's something carrying something. It's very
small. I thought it looked like a penguin.
Yeah, I mean,
it looks like a big-ass penguin.
It does look like a big-ass penguin.
But is it a kid in one of those little sleeping sacks? Because it's kind of walking like, you know, if you're in a sack, you can't have a full stride. It's like a kid that is in a sleeping sack.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you're right. But it does seem to have two legs about it. Obviously, the dash cam footage is not great. But what's very strange about this is that his mother, the driver, Mitch, his mother was in the passenger seat. Now, he claims that he couldn't pull over fast enough, first of all, because it was a highway and he had a hauler behind him. And so immediately he says to his mother, call the police. So his mother calls the police and reports it, obviously. And apparently it was, you know, documented that this is what happened. Later on that evening, he calls the police and he offers up the dash cam footage. He's like, here's the dash cam footage of an incident that my mother reported earlier. And the police say to him, they say, oh no, we've found the child. We don't need the footage. Don't worry about it. And so he's like, oh, okay, cool. So what he does is he posts it online. It's picked up by the Daily Mail, right? This is like where all these coincidence kind of things happen. Now, he says he posted it online just because he said, well, look, they found the kid. And I thought this was just, you know, weird footage. And I'm so glad that the kid was safe and okay. But of course, the Daily Mail wanted to confirm this. So they contacted the police. The police said, no, we didn't find any child. And the search was called off at 3:45 that morning. There's also been no reports of missing children. It's like, what on earth is going on? Why would the police say that they found the child, but then when the media looks at it, they say that they haven't found the child? And it just becomes even more strange when you look at the at the footage itself, there's also a photograph of a still. And the still, it actually looks like, Ben, almost like a little goat.
It's a leprechaun.
Well, it looks like a little goat standing on its hind legs when you zoom right in. So
a goat?
Look, it's
maybe that's what he meant when he said it was a kid.
Maybe. But look, the reason why I raise it is very strange, and it obviously it could potentially just be something completely normal, and this could be pareidolia, and it could be, you know,
completely normal that there's a toddler on the highway the middle of the night.
When I say completely normal, I'm not saying it's a toddler, but what I'm saying is it could be an animal of some kind, but it is weird that it's walking on its hind legs. But look, the reason why I raised this is because this is something that was reported decades ago by Anne Slate. Anne Slate was convinced that not just people seeing UFOs, but a whole range of different interactions with strange creatures, strange entities, strange time slips, all that kind of stuff, relates to a group of extraterrestrials that are testing humanity. They're using Earth as an extraterrestrial laboratory. They're running a whole heap of tests on us. And she says, you know, there's a huge amount of examples. Like, there was one of Harry Stubbs. Now, Harry was playing with his friend Jim, and this was in a residential street in downtown Los Angeles. This is back in the 1960s. And Harry, for some reason, just gets this feeling that he's being watched. He doesn't know why, but for some unknown reason, he looks straight up into the sky. And when he looks up, there's this round metallic object that's sitting over them, and he's just staring at it. And he says he's convinced. He doesn't know how, but he gets this feeling that someone aboard takes a photograph of him. As soon as it takes a photograph, the object shoots up into the night sky.
He gets a feeling.
It gets a feeling, right?
Now I hate that feeling of getting my photograph taken.
Yeah, by extraterrestrials. but it continues, right? So there was a woman by the name of Mrs. Wallace, and she was from Minnesota. This happened in late 1973. And she saw this brilliant silver cloud that was hovering over a tree in her backyard. It was about 11 p.m. in the evening. Now, she said she was watching because it was this weird cloud. It was like a glittering silver cloud. And she said out of it came this extremely powerful white beam of light that shot straight into her neighbor's living room. Now, she's watching this thing going, what the hell is this? What's it doing? She said the cloud dissipated from this object, revealing a domed disc craft. And she said somehow the object knew what she was thinking. Because she starts, she's looking at this craft and she's wondering, what's the greenish thing at the top of the UFO? And the object tilts towards her to show her this glowing arm-like antenna that's coming at the top. Now, she said she tried to walk closer to it. And when she tried to walk closer to it, it put up some type of invisible force field or wall. And when she walked into the wall, it caused this image of silver. It was just a silver color that was all in her eyes that she couldn't penetrate through. But when she stepped back, it returned to normal. So she also reported that she felt like she was under some kind of control because for whatever reason, she said when she saw this, all she did is just walk inside, sat down and had a cup of tea. She was like, oh, okay, UFO firing a light into my neighbor's window. Never mind. But afterwards in the morning, obviously she recalled it. Now she told some friends about it and the friends had actually said they had seen something in the area as well. But it was strange because it was almost like it had drifted from her memory. And it was only afterwards when her friends said, hey, do you remember when you were telling us about that UFO? She'd forgotten completely about it. It was almost like this influence that's taking place. Another report came from, I think this was from Bahia Blanca. This is down in, where was this? This is an Argentinian truck driver that had this experience also in 1973. He claims that he was pursued by a UFO. Now, he was suffering from nervous shock because he completely forgot about the incident with the UFO. But his nervous shock got so bad that he went and consulted a physician. And the physician, while he was there, I don't know how things worked out in Argentina, but back in the 1970s, but they shot him up with sodium pentothal and then put him under hypnosis. And while recalling what happened in hypnosis, this UFO that was pursuing his truck had actually stopped his vehicle. And he had watched as this UFO had extended these wires or something from itself and had thrown it over the power lines. It was pulling power from the power line and then also had another hose coming out down into a body of water and was draining water at the same time.
Got a refill.
Well, look, you could write this off and go, well, this is obviously, this guy has a very active imagination. But apparently the researcher that looked into this said that he validated that there was a high power spike, an unexplained rise in power consumption at precisely the same time that this incident took place. So there was some type of, you know, at least electrical validation of this weird event taking, you know, occurring. So, you know, what Anne is saying is all these things are happening to either test human beings, to monitor us, to put implants into us so they can track us. And it makes sense because that's precisely what human beings do to wild animal populations. We put trackers into dolphins and into whales to monitor where they're going, turtles, for example. We put them onto birds to see what they're doing and how they're migrating.
It's an old argument,
but she's saying that...
Doesn't mean it's not valid.
Exactly. And she's saying this is happening because the extraterrestrials, it might be something sinister, or they're just simply trying to work out how we'll respond to disclosure. And that's no more apparent than in the story of Shirley Marlowe. Now, Shirley Marlowe lives in Chicago. She has four children. They live in a small suburb on the outskirts of Chicago. And she was saying in 1966, she was watching television just with her family, just being normal. And while she was watching television, her mind just started to wander and she kind of became a little bit into a daze. And in this daze, she said something caused her to walk upstairs and go and lay down in her bedroom. Now, when she did, she said she woke up with this horrible start because someone was standing next to the bed and she was in terror. Now, she looks over, she can't see it, but she can feel it. Like, she gets up to run and she bumps into something.
She can feel it.
And as soon as she bumps into something, it's like, and it disappears. Now, following this, it seems like it was setting her up because any time that she was watching television or about to fall asleep or reading or in this calm state of mind, she said it was almost like her mind was being primed for an interaction with something at this moment that she wasn't quite sure. But what did happen is on one particular day, she was driving her children to school. She was picking them up after school and she was driving home. And as she was driving home, she said she got this suggestion into her mind. And it was this hot, sticky day. But for some reason, this voice comes into her head, says, roll up all the windows right now.
So she's like, monkeys.
Oh. Well, no, close. Bees! It's out of nowhere. She said, as she crosses through the intersection, her car is hit with a large mass of dark bees. She said this swarm was hitting her car like bullets. It was all over her windshield. And she says she doesn't know how, but had she not put up the windows, they would have been all through the car.
You know when that happens?
When?
Is when you've accidentally got the queen somewhere in your car. It happened in Europe. I saw a photo of it the other day. It was in a couple of years ago where a couple had hired a vehicle to go on a tourist drive or something. And when they got back to the hotel, there was just like a million bees on their car. This whole swarm had followed them wherever they had been. Because somehow the queen had gotten in the car or something. The queen was in the car somehow.
Wow.
So the car was just covered in bees.
What are the odds of that happening? Look, it seems like that, at least with this, this was the beginning of Shirley interacting with some type of intelligence that was directing her life and trying to maybe help her. But, you know, she started seeing things like she describes one particular evening where she just opened up her blinds and outside the blinds is this circular craft hovering with this small goblin-style entity that's inside the craft just smiling at her. So she's like, close the blinds. Like, no, there's nothing there. Okay, opens the blinds, it's gone. She's like, okay, I'm going crazy.
Back to normal.
But look, she had 2 months of seeing craft like spraying vapors outside their vehicles to encase them in clouds. It got to the point where the family members started hearing these high-frequency beeps that were going off inside their home. They checked every single electrical appliance that they had, and even they had professionals in. They couldn't find the source of these beeps.
That's like Tim's story that you were describing from the forest, hearing the beeps.
Yes.
His father's pager.
Yep. So ultimately, in January of 1967, the Chicago area was snowed in, so all the kids were told to stay home. And one of the kids, her 11-year-old daughter, is like, oh, I've got an Ouija board. Let's play with that.
Always good.
You know, really smart idea of what to do when you're having interactions with some intelligence. But she did. She, for some reason, said she felt like she should ask the Ouija board, are there such things as flying saucers? And apparently this thing spells out yes. And then it says, look out the sliding door. So she goes running over and opens the sliding door. And there's this large red glowing light that's just hanging in the yard, like in the backyard. and then took off into the night sky. So she's like, okay, this is not great. She became very unnerved after this because anytime she went for a drive, she would be escorted by UFOs. They would fly down, they would fly back into the sky. It was very distressing because she had no one to talk to. No one understood what was happening. But this voice started communicating with her more and more and more. And she found that when she asked a question of them, as she said, in commas, she would get this concise answer immediately. So apparently objects would start teleporting through the house. They'd disappear and then reappear, or sometimes disappear altogether. And apparently she would ask, and this mysterious voice would just say, oh, we're taking them to examine them. Then her son got this deep gash that should have been sutured, but for some reason it immediately healed.
Hmm.
Like it just healed miraculously with no scar. She asked, well, what's going on? And the entity or this voice just says, we placed a suggestion in his mind for the body to heal itself. And indeed, the body did the rest. So she was like, okay, this is interesting. She tried to talk to it more, but it got to the point where essentially she became very fearful and ashamed by it because it was bothering the neighbors, it was bothering her children. So she went running outside one night, screaming at the night sky, just screaming at telling them to go away. She was sick and tired of being poked and prodded. You know, she was in a rage at the empty sky, whatever this was. And apparently the voice is like, we are sorry. We are simply trying to observe you. We are teleporting things around your house so we can work out who you are. The beeping sounds were apparently some type of echolocation that the entity was doing to locate the people that are in the home to know where they were. And they explained that, look, we can't show ourselves to you, but we range from 3 feet to 9 feet. Our hands are webbed together.
What?
And we have this scaly skin, and we don't want to show ourselves to human beings because human beings might be fearful of us.
And rightly so. They sound like freaks.
Yeah, look, it got to, and they are, you know, and it was basically they were told that it wouldn't be pleasing to see us. Oh, and by the way, they're androgynous.
Yes, of course they are.
Right? And so she lost a great deal of weight because she was extremely nervous. This is Shirley. She began doubting her insanity more and more and more. She ultimately consulted with the psychiatrist. When she went in one day, the psychiatrist started wandering around on his hands and knees on the floor looking for a hole in his desk. And finally...
Money well spent.
Yeah, finally he stood up and it was because he'd been controlled by them. They had somehow controlled the psychiatrist. And you know, it wasn't until May of 1969 that she was finally able to breathe this sigh of relief because finally, out of nowhere, the voice comes through and says, we are leaving this area now. And then that was it. So she actually documented a lot of these experiences and sent them to Dr. Leo Sprinkle. And Leo Sprinkle, as we know, is a great UFO researcher. He couldn't really find much about what was happening to her, apart from the fact he ran a whole heap of psychological tests on Shirley and found out that she was at a completely normal psychological baseline.
Right.
So she didn't seem to be prone to, you know, fantasy, or she's not a fantasist. She didn't seem to have any type of psychological disturbance, but there was something that was going on with her. And, Anne points out that this is another, Anne Slate, this is another example of how it's like they're installing a transmitter in someone. They're monitoring and disturbing people to push them to their psychological limits to see how they respond. Another case that Leo Sprinkle found, so after he had Shirley come to him, he was like, well, this is very similar to a case that happened in 1968 in Laramie in Wyoming, and it relates to a Mrs. B. Now, Mrs. B was of, you know, normal height, you know, a normal housewife, but she had this experience where she was a homemaker, and she had seen a UFO that was in a park behind her home. She couldn't really make out exactly what it was, and a lot of her memory was very foggy about just seeing these lights. This is all she could recall. But when she underwent hypnosis later on, regression hypnosis, she said that she could see this foggy kind of cloud and then something swooping down. And she says this figure starts walking towards her car. Now, it puts its what she thought were hands up into the air and then kind of makes this gesture of drawing its hand across her chest, and she goes into a trance. Now, all she said she can see is these big yellow eyes. She's just getting flashes of it as she's trying to recall it. But in the regression with Leo Sprinkle, she's like, oh my God, it's a bird. It's a bird on top of me. It's massive. There's an object coming down from the sky, or it's attached to something. it's putting something into me, but it's got these large ears. Its face is all green. It's got slanted eyebrows. It looks like an eagle. Something touches me. It's a claw. It's a claw. It's this pointed thing. It grabs me by the arm. It drags me further into the bush and it inserts something. I'm getting a pain into my chest and then nothing.
That's new. An eagle creature.
An eagle creature. And
it's not just a screen memory because she's
being pulling it out. Right? Exactly. So I'm laughing about, you know, how we talk about the blue avians and how ridiculous that is. But I'm like, literally, she's being attacked by a green avian.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately the conclusion here was that there was some, they weren't able to find it, but there was something inserted into her skull. There was some possible tracking implant or some type of implant that was put into her skull. And Leo Sprinkle encouraged her to go and have a skull x-ray because this is where during the session she was kind of recalling something. But her mother immediately was like, I don't want you having, you know, any x-rays put through your skull, so we're not going to find it. But it's not unprecedented. I mean, there was an example of Warren Smith, and he led an investigation with a Wisconsin lawyer who had a very similar experience. Like, he just saw a light. But then ultimately, when he underwent regression hypnosis, he recalls that when he was having missing time, he was taken aboard some craft and some metallic device was pressed against the back of his neck and something was implanted into the base of his skull to control his behavior. And when doctors examined this area later on, they found that there was actually this little welt. And when they peeled the welt back, they took a scalpel and just kind of peeled the welt back. While there was no implant, there were all these tiny, uniform, perfect perforations in the back of his neck underneath this welt.
Did an eagle put it there?
Well, we don't know that. You know, that is a good question. So, look, I like the concept. And as you said, Ben, you hit the nail on the head. It's an old concept, but that doesn't mean that it's any less valid. I think this is what is happening. And it seems like, you know, while a lot of activity in the last 20 years or so seems to have died down, there's this element of high strangeness. And maybe it's because the world is becoming more chaotic. It's like, we've got to be honest, in the last 10 years, things have become increasingly chaotic.
I haven't noticed anything.
You haven't noticed anything at all? No, it's fine. I mean, half of the US is burning, but no, it's fine. Not a problem at all. But I think that maybe this stuff is happening again. Like, it seems that the high strangeness element is kicking back into gear and a lot of people are being exposed to this stuff. And it's going to be different now because we have so many dash cams. We all carry cameras on us in our phones, you know, all this stuff. But we know that the phenomenon can interfere with all our electrics as well. So it's like we're going to get fleeting images of these things and we're never going to be able to pinpoint what's going on. But it seems like there is a massive increase at the moment, and which I guess is good for business. But I'm interested to see where the next few years are going to take us, because I think this sort of stuff is going to keep going on. But look, take a look at the footage itself. Let me know what you think. If you're a wildlife expert, I don't know. Let me know if you think it's a wallaby.
It's too low res to really see what it
is. That's the problem. It's really low res. But I just find it odd that the police are behaving in an odd fashion. It could just be a simple, you know, miscommunication.
I messaged the guy on Instagram because I want to know if he knows for sure that he saw a kid, because he was in the car. And if he saw a kid's face, then it's case closed.
Yeah, exactly.
But he hasn't replied to my message, so...
We'll wait and see what happens.
Screw him.
It could just be, I don't know, it could be inundated with other people.
I said, do you have any idea who I am? Answer my message now. And surprisingly, he hasn't responded.
That's odd. That's very strange.
Yeah. I have many leather-bound books. That's a wrap for this show. Thank you so much for being on Plus. Make sure you check out the show notes. Let us know what you think of the Peanut Butter Zone art project from Sasquatch arranging his peanut butter jars. Maybe that's the secret to the paranormal. Just have a jar of peanut butter on hand at all times. Have it ready to go. Thank you so much for being on Plus. We'll catch you on Friday for your next MU. Until then, have a great week.